from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, the Islamic State, ISIS, yesterday released a video showing the beheading of American journalist Stephen Sotloff, who was captured in Syria over a year ago. This morning, the United States said the video is authentic. The news comes just 2 weeks after the murder of journalist James Foley by the same Islamic militant group. Meanwhile, the United States continues to launch airstrikes in Iraq against ISIS. What more action should the U.S. and its allies take? We'll take all that up. And then the bottom half of the hour, we'll move our discussion into the legacy of the Federal Wilderness Act, which President Lyndon Johnson signed into law 50 years ago today. Forum is next. Join us for the hour after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. As military strikes continue in Iraq against ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, yesterday the militants released a now authenticated video displaying the beheading murder of the second American hostage in 2 weeks. Stephen Sotloff, a freelance journalist taken hostage a year ago in northern Syria, was executed despite televised pleas by his mother to ISIS leaders to show mercy and spare his life. Here was President Obama earlier this morning speaking about this in Eastern Europe.
I want to say that today the prayers of the American people are with the family of a devoted and courageous journalist, Stephen Sotloff. Overnight, our government determined that tragically, Stephen was taken from us in a horrific act of violence.
In this morning's opening forum segment, we discuss the ongoing crisis over ISIS and its brutality and how and in what ways the United States and the West should respond. Joining us from the nation's capital, Phyllis Bennis, who is a fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies, also directs the New Internationalism Project, which focuses on U.S. policies in the Middle East. She's also the author of Ending the Iraq War, a Primer. And Phyllis Bennis, good to have you back on Forum. Good morning.
Great to be with you.
We also want to welcome Jeffrey White, who is with us this morning from Alexandria, Virginia. He's a defense fellow with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and spent 34 years at the Defense Intelligence Agency. His work there included planning for the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Welcome back, Jeffrey White.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you as well. And let me begin with you, if I may, Jeffrey White. We should mention that these two beheadings have also involved a declaration of war against the United States. The second one was titled A Second Message to America. And I read your piece, Jeffrey White, in which you say that essentially ISIS has shown that it has real capability in terms of military operations and strategy for military and political goals. President, on the other hand, President Obama has been excoriated for having at least said publicly there's no strategy until today when he said we need to build a coalition and we need to degrade and destroy. Are we taking him at his word here for some action, and what would that action be, or what should it be?
Well, I think we've had a strategy for Iraq, and the problem here is that we have not had a strategy for Syria, an approach to dealing with ISIS in Syria. It's whatever we do in Syria against ISIS has to be an extension of what we're doing in Iraq. That is, we have to see the ISIS problem is covering both countries and needing to be addressed in both countries. It certainly needs a broad approach of political, diplomatic kind of activity and so on, but there is a key military component here, and that's to reduce the military capabilities of the Islamic State.
Well, if we're going to have airstrikes in Syria, it means we're going to be helping the Assad regime, doesn't it?
Indirectly, but I think we can take action that specifically addresses the threats that ISIS presents both in Iraq and in Syria. And in fact, you have to accept that you can't make a perfect solution here. You're going to have to, take some action that will probably have some downsides. But hitting ISIS military capabilities, I think, is critical.
Well,
stopping them.
I'm sorry, stopping them?
Stopping their expansion.
And Phyllis Bennis, let me bring you into this because I think you see things quite differently. You've said on a number of occasions that if there's anything we learned previously in Iraq, it's when we bomb, we get more recruits, and it's not going to stop this kind of advance of the Islamic State. But what else can we do at this point to defeat this kind of extremism, if not simply using airstrikes, for example, or what we're hearing advocated by Jeffrey White.
Yeah, you know, I know there's clearly a push for that, and we're going to be hearing more of it from Congress when they come back, particularly after the emotional responses to these horrific up-close and personal murders of the American journalists. But I think we have to be very clear on why this doesn't work. I do agree with Jeffrey that we need a strategy that looks at the whole question of the expansion of ISIS, why they're growing, why they're gaining support. And I think that has everything to do, and it's more obvious in Iraq than in Syria. It's a bit more complex, but the principles are the same. The reason, particularly again in Iraq, that they are so powerful right now is because they're not operating alone. They have won support from significant sectors of the Iraqi Sunni community.
May I also add to that, Phyllis? They're also getting tremendous support and resources from Qatar.
Absolutely, and from Saudi Arabia. Yeah. We should be very clear that the money and weapons, they're getting weapons that are U.S. weapons that have been bought by these Gulf states. Some are being captured. Others are being sent. Money is going from the Gulf states. But I think what's more important right now than either the weapons or the money, although obviously that's crucial, is the fact that they are gaining support from local people who are making it possible for them to win these victories. We're talking about the leaders of the Sunni tribal militias, who are powerful militias in their own right, and are standing, to a large degree, not entirely, with ISIS, not because they agree with them, despite their horror at the brutality, but because they see no one else to stand with them against a sectarian, repressive, violent Shia sectarian government in Baghdad. The same is true for the former Ba'athist-era military leaders. The generals who have provided the training and the strategic planning for ISIS are coming from the old military that was sent home without a job at the moment of the U.S. Invasion and occupation. And finally, we're seeing the same thing from ordinary Iraqi Sunnis who are saying, you know, we're facing terrible repression from our own government. We're having people arrested, tortured, executed in huge numbers, and the only ones willing to stand against them seem to be ISIS, so we'll stand with them even though we don't like them. That's what has to change, and the problem is every time President Obama says the right words, which is we have to persuade the Sunni leaders to break with ISIS, his practice has the opposite effect, because when the U.S. bombs ISIS, what it's perceived as in Iraq is the U.S. is supporting or participating in a civil war on the side of the Kurds and the side of the Shia against the Sunnis. So that's not going to lead to the Sunni people, Sunni militias, Sunni military people breaking with ISIS. It's going to consolidate their relationship to ISIS.
I don't know if you saw Tom Friedman's article in today's New York Times, but essentially he says every time we seem to want to get involved in these sectarian battles, for example, supporting al-Maliki or whomever happens to be in power in places like Iraq, there are so many unintended consequences. And right now,
And we don't learn those lessons.
Well,
he's absolutely right.
I understand that as your position, but also he also says that that the homeland may not be threatened here, and yet I'm really wondering if we can be cavalier and assume that to be the case. I think with September 11th coming up, and with war declared against the United States, perhaps the homeland really is. They have enormous resources. They have billions of dollars. They have an airfield now. They can buy all kinds of things on the black market. They have apparently Libyan planes, supposedly. I mean, this is a real clear and present danger to the homeland, is it not?
Well, I think there are dangers of, I'm not sure about the thing about planes. They don't have pilots that they can, of their own, that can fly those planes. I mean, I think we have to be really careful about how much we extrapolate from this. What is a danger, and we shouldn't be cavalier, there is a danger of individual acts of terror that could come from somebody with a U.S. passport, a European passport, who could get some training and come home and carry out a terrorist act. That's always a danger. The notion that somehow we can bomb away that danger simply doesn't exist. That danger will exist as long as there are people who are angry and furious and have access to weapons, most of which are weapons we have left throughout the region. You know, we're seeing that right now so visibly in Libya, where Libya has completely collapsed into into warring factions in a sectarian civil war between these various militia and Islamist organizations that are all relying on weapons that were sent by NATO and are now, as well as Gaddafi's weapons that are now opened up as a result of the NATO airstrikes. So we're seeing the results of those weapons spreading throughout North Africa, spreading into the broader Middle East, very directly the response of what happens as a result of bombing. When you have danger, you have to take that seriously, but bombing has, every time it's been tried, made things worse, not better.
Phyllis Bennis and Jeffrey Wayne, we'll get Jeffrey Wright's response, but I'd like to also invite those of you listening to join us in this discussion. It is unfortunately only a half hour because we have scheduled another program segment for the rest of this hour, but if you would like to join us and really bring whatever thoughts you have to the conversation or any questions or comments, we welcome your involvement now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and again, the time to call would be now. Clear and present danger of ISIS, so talking about its danger to the homeland, but also talking about what really needs to be done, what kind of strategy, what sort of action ought to be deployed, bombing or really not bombing, more bombing in addition to the bombing that's going on and aerial strikes. We have two very decidedly different points of view here, and you may want to bring your own into the discussion. Again, the toll-free number for your calls is 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, and you can also tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. Jeffrey White, I'd just like to get maybe a brief response from you about this idea that this sort of aerial bombardment is not necessarily going to get us anywhere, as Phyllis Bennis says.
Sure. My view is that if your house is burning down, right, you call the fire department. You know, that is, you need to take immediate action to deal with the immediate threat. And talking about non-military responses, you know, while those are necessary, they're not sufficient to deal with the immediate threat here. ISIS is a danger largely because it deploys significant military capability and knows how to use that. So combating that capability is necessary. While we're organizing political coalitions, humanitarian efforts, de-radicalization programs, ISIS is on the march. So you need to strike that capability. We have the military capability to do that effectively. We're doing it now in Iraq, and we could do it in Syria.
Why would that exclude, why would that exclude, I just happened to hear Anthony Zinni, who was scheduled to be on this program later, and who was involved with you, in fact, in the strategy for the Iraq war. But he's saying that maybe we've become too verboten with the idea of boots on the ground, that perhaps, if not boots on the ground, really doing something about getting the Kurds allied in a coalition here because they're good fighters and they need military assistance from us. Are these the kinds of things that we should be looking at, or just aerial strikes from your perspective?
Well, definitely we should be looking at the other military kinds of operations, especially advisors, to help the Kurds and to help rebels in Syria combat ISIS. In almost all these kinds of cases, we're not talking about simply one plane, one card, which is bombing. We're talking about multiple cards, political diplomatic cards, and multiple military cards. But there definitely needs to be a component now because the house is on fire.
Well, I'm sure, Phyllis Bennis, you're in favor of the political and diplomatic, but what about those other cards? What about, for example, arming the Kurds or bringing a coalition to bear in a military sense?
Well, I think we need a coalition, but I think it needs to be political. I think part of the problem is when we speak of, Jeffrey talks about multiple cards, the problem is we don't respond with other cards. We don't respond at all until there's a sense of emergency. I mean, we should be clear that the violence of ISIS is far more dangerous and directed at the people where they live than it is against us. The fact that two American journalists have been killed so brutally is a horror, but it's nothing compared to the numbers of people that have been killed that we haven't felt that same level of responsibility for. So I think we have to be very careful. What happens is we only look to, at those moments of crisis like we're facing right now, we only look to the military. We don't ever get to the other cards, as Jeffrey described it. And that's the problem. This is what happened in Libya. We were suddenly told, we have to go in because they're about to face a genocide. Then we just heard the same language around the question of the Yazidis on the mountain. We have to go in because they could face a genocide. And no one wants to risk doing nothing in the face of genocide, so it alleviates any possibility of investigating, wait a minute, was this actually an imminent genocide or not? And then what are the other options, and what needs to happen afterwards?
Well, Phyllis,
never seems to come.
From the standpoint of everything that's been reported from that region, it's getting harder to report in the wake of all the massacres and executions and abductions by ISIS. But the fact of the matter is...
And by others.
And by others, of course, but there is a genocidal element to this. I mean, they're trying to kill all non-Sunni and all non-Arabs.
They are. And what happened was that luckily the Yazidis were saved in large numbers by the PYD, the Kurdish organization allied to the PKK that the U.S. keeps on its terrorism list. It wasn't because of U.S. airstrikes. There were apparently only two airstrikes that were in that area. All the others were up near Erbil. So, you know, the question of what saved, we have to be very modest here, what saved the Yazidis was not U.S. airstrikes. It was action by Syrian Kurds who opened up a corridor from the backside of the mountain, got people off the mountain into Syria, and then across Syria and back into Iraq at a safer crossing point. So, you know, the question of whether the U.S. airstrikes were involved with that or not is a very open question. And I think that as long as we keep the conversation focused only on should it only be airstrikes or do we also need boots on the ground? Is it really sneakers on the ground because we're talking about special forces? There's another 350 troops that were just approved into Iraq.
Into Baghdad.
Approved last night.
Yeah.
And that brings it up to over 1,300 U.S. troops that are now on the ground in Iraq. You know, we can say no boots on the ground. Maybe they're all wearing sneakers. But there are troops on the ground without any serious consultation with Congress, without any real explanation, and without a strategy.
Again, Phyllis Bennis is a fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies. I want to bring some callers in here, and let me bring you in first. Stuart, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on the air.
Go ahead.
I just want to say, as a Buddhist, where we value human life of all kinds, it breaks my heart just reading about the death toll every day, not just the unfortunate journalists. And from that point of view, I think we need to do whatever we can to stop ISIS. I understand that the Peshmerga, the Kurdish Peshmerga, have requested war material, heavy weapons, artillery. I don't even know if we're doing that, but I think we should. I mean, that's one thing we can do.
All right, Stuart, I thank you for your comments. Let me go to another caller here and get a few of you on here. Mike, go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me. Just real briefly, we need to do everything we can to annihilate them as quickly as possible because they are on a mission to destroy everybody who is not them, and they will come to America and Europe, and they will start blowing up supermarkets and suicide bombing subway trains. It's just a matter of time. And, you know, we're going to wait around too long and get too liberal. And, I mean, I'm not trying to say, anything bad or, try to dismiss the value of the lives over in their region, but it's getting to a point where we're going to have some major hits here in this country, and then we're going to go, oh, we should have done this and we should have done that, and it's going to be too late. We're going to wait too long, and we're going to have some huge catastrophes here. These guys are coming over to destroy us.
All right, Mike, thank you. Baghdadi has said when he was released from jail to the Americans who are there, we'll see you in New York. Here's a listener who writes, so far nothing explains why bombing ISIS will not work. And another email from a listener says, why are the atrocities of ISIS and killing a few Americans more worthy of our attention than the killing of hundreds of children with U.S. weapons in Gaza? This seems like a distraction, a real threat, but still a distraction. Another listener says, where were we? Were we not supporting the anti-Assad rebels that became ISIS? Do we have any role in the Middle East that's making the situation any better? Another listener writes online, another beheading that will elicit charges of photoshopped or staged by some. Others will blame the American government and probably Israel. Truth is that Islamist believers have been trying for over 1,000 years to regress human progress and have no desire for peace, tolerance, or other philosophies, cultures, and religion. America and Europe must put a stop to the cancer that was permitted to grow by allowing indiscriminate immigration and incubating these sociopaths immediately. Another listener writes, does anyone anywhere ever do anything wrong, monstrous, criminal, or morally bankrupt without its being the fault of the United States? Why is it that there is a flexible standard for anyone outside the U.S. who does terrible things and yet another inflexible standard for the United States? No. Someone, somewhere did something bad. It's the CIA's fault, assisted by USAID and Walmart. Well, let me bring another caller on here. And Devin, that's you. Good morning. Welcome.
Hi. I'm just wondering, has our democratic process put people in charge who are just grossly incompetent or insincere in their goals? Because we have done nothing but cause more problems.
Let me go to you on that for a moment, Jeffrey White, because there has been a tremendous amount of criticism against President Obama for not acting quicker with respect to supporting the moderates in Syria, with not acting quicker against ISIS. He's been excoriated, in fact, particularly from the right. What's your take?
Well, you know, I think he has he bears some culpability in these issues, in the sense that we had the opportunity, the capability, and you know, definite prospects for success of helping moderate rebels in Syria, going back at least to 2012. The failure to aid them in any meaningful way, at least in the military sense, has helped produce the ISIS phenomenon. It helped radicalize the movement there. And it was basically, as clear as we can understand it, it was the president's decisions to not to provide the rebels with that kind of assistance they could really use. So I think he does bear some of the responsibility.
Phyllis Bettis, can we get you on this?
Yeah, I think we have to be very clear. The rebels were never, the rebels that the U.S. said they wanted to arm, the so-called moderate rebels, were never going to have the kind of political experience, strategy, and leadership that the ISIS has managed to create because of its experience fighting against the U.S. In Iraq. We should be clear, ISIS didn't just emerge out of nowhere. It used to be called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. It was fighting against the U.S. occupation of Iraq. That's where it got so much of its military experience, and it got experienced leaders from the old military of Iraq. We have to be very careful when we use these terms about the ultimate evil. We heard the same thing about Bashar al-Assad. We have to take him down. He has to be removed because he is the ultimate evil. Look what he's doing to his own people. Suddenly, we're now talking about going in to attack the people who are trying to overthrow him, not for the reasons we like, but they are the strongest of all the forces that are trying to overthrow Bashar al-Assad. So maybe next week it'll be somebody else who emerges who turns out to be the ultimate evil, and we'll have to ally with ISIS because they're against these other guys. You know, that can't ever be the basis for strategy for a region. We need to start with diplomacy and engagement and not start with military strikes.
We've got about seconds left here. Jeffrey White, I think you wanted another word here.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's incumbent on the United States and the president to develop the appropriate strategies for dealing with these kinds of problems. The fact that he hasn't, at least in the Syrian case, you know, is a failure of leadership here.
All right, we'll let it stand there. Thank you, Jeffrey White, Defense Fellow with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. And thank you, Phyllis Bennis, Fellow with the Institute for Policy Studies and Director of the New Internationalism Project. And thank you, our listeners. We did say we had another segment coming up for you, and indeed we do. It's been 50 years today that the Wilderness Act was passed. We'll find out all about its history, its legacy, and what's up ahead. All about wilderness when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.